Alderman Hanneman.
Do you happen to know the rating on the eastern leg of Pute's?
I do not.
I'm not quite sure how to put this, other than looking a gift horse in the mouth, maybe, and not wanting to do that. Up to this point, have the residents along Pute's Road from 27th to 35th or 42nd Street, has there been any sort of communication with them as to whether or not they really want that stretch of Pute's Road widened? And I'm saying this because, and understanding there's the parking issue at Kayla's Playground, but I would say a good 50% of the calls I've received since coming into this chair have been speeding on Pute's Road. And I'm foreseeing that if that's widened, and without having that the crest of the hill there at 31st Street somehow leveled off a little bit, it's going to be an even bigger problem. I mean, yes, do I want to have a nice, much nicer road there? Yes, we have the potholes, not necessarily to the degree. I do agree that the western edge of Pute's is probably worse than the eastern edge. But I also see that there's probably, oh my gosh, there's blood here. I'm sorry, there's not a whole lot of area along Pute's Road for new development up to that point, because we've got the forest preserve there on the south side. The majority of the lots along the north side are already built or wetlands or whatever. So I'm having a hard time being a little bit new to this project and thought, understanding the benefit of that expense 7 or 8 years down the road. I think many people would be happy to see that leg just repaved and the potholes filled, and if it's going to be a 20 to 30 year, yes, I understand there are some subsidiary issues with drainage and whatnot going on in that area, but I think in terms of the value and the bang for the buck and the neighborhood aesthetic, so to speak, I'd like to see that maybe done sooner than later with the lower cost.
Okay. That's the guidance I'm looking for.
By the way, since I don't, well, I do have a dog in this hunt, but, you know, sometimes there is a value in potholes, as maybe Alderman Nelson can testify to. It does slow people down because they don't want to drop their transmission or their.
Potholes are bad, for the record.
in your district, they are.
Yes.
But they do slow people down. And they're the equivalent of speed bumps as depressions. But because what you get, once you get a nice smooth surface, another 10 miles an hour. So that's what it is.
Yes, that is true.
What do we need here?
So I think I understood the old woman to option B, direct staff to stay with current plans for West Pute's Road in the 2020 road program.
If I may, I am only speaking towards the eastern end of
Pute's
Road.
That's all there is, so it's fine.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were also including the other far end of.
I would suggest that we can have the full discussion during our budget hearings.
Okay, so we move on. Item G16 on page 235 is a resolution to award design of an industrial park lift station. Is there a motion to approve resolution 2020, resolution to award design of the industrial park lift station to Grafe USA, $202,100.
Direction.
Is there such a motion?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. G17 is a change order in the amount of $5,350 to make a bigger sign for the front, paid by the Tourism Commission.
So moved.
Second.
You also note that there is a drawing at your table. We made a little bit of a change. We're not being quite so cute. We're making it straight instead of a F, because it would look weird on the other side.
Yeah, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
When there was talk a few weeks ago about Franklin Field being named Franklin Field, city attorney was saying that the city citizens owned that name, and that sign was going to come back before the council for approval. It went up like next week, and we never heard about it. Any comments on that?
I think I need a little more, Alderman Mayor. I'm not quite following.
Yeah, the city attorney said that we approved the use of the word Franklin, the name Franklin, for Franklin Field. So that was going to come in. Actually, we were told it was going to come back to us with the design. But it went up there. Franklin Field is Franklin Field. It never came back for approval to use the city name or approval for the sign, as far as I know.
Mr. City Attorney.
My understanding from the Economic Development Director is that the contract is not complete at this point in time.
That is correct. Are you referring, Alderman Mayor, to the naming of the stadium? Okay, I would have to go back and refresh my memory from notes, because I don't recall that.
Maybe the city attorney recalls that the city controls the name, and we would have a naming right. We would approve the naming right if it were to be.
But
I believe that Rock Ventures decided to move forward and name it Franklin Field before their opening game, as opposed to not having any name at all for their stadium. And I believe that that was a decision made by the private developer. So in terms of what happens with the execution of the agreement, we'll have to take a closer look at that and determine if there's any issues. I don't have my notes from that, since that's a different topic, so I'm sorry I can't give you a better answer this evening, but I will certainly address it.
So, Alderman, trying to be you said thank you, which is the end of the conversation, which if I was really smart, I'd be quiet, but maybe I'm not that smart. So the question would be is, what is it that you would want approval on, since the contract is between the Tourism Commission and the Rock Ventures?
Well, first of all, I will say thank you to the director for answering my question and pursuing that. As I recall, the night we discussed the naming of the field, the approval of that was going to come back to the council, because the council controlled the naming rights to use the term Franklin in naming the Franklin Field. That's all I'm asking. If I know where the numbers are like that, then so be it.
Oh, I remember it.
Mr. City Attorney.
That's my recollection, and I believe it was mentioned in, or was part of the motion somewhere within the last week or so. I received a request for a recommendation of a special counsel with regard to a combination of that agreement, which has not come back to me since whenever that meeting was, as well as some other development cooperation between the Tourism Commission and development related entities, and a referral was made, and I'm assuming there was some follow-up on that somewhere in the last week. So
okay, I got questions, but I'll leave them alone. Do we have a motion? Is there a motion on the floor? Has it been voted?
No.
All those in favor of the motion to approve the change order signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Madam Clerk.
Alderman D'Andrea.
Aye.
Alderman Mayor.
No.
Alderwoman Wilhelm.
Aye.
Alderwoman Hanneman.
Aye.
Alderman Barber.
Aye.
Alderman Nelson.
Aye.
Motion carries, 5 ayes, 1 no, no absent, no abstentions. G18 is a report on current expenditures under the COVID crisis. Mr. Ratzenberg, we're at what, 212? Out of 250, right?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The this is G18, I believe.
Correct, page 251.
The city had a small amount of additional expenditures in the last 2 weeks, about $6,000 worth of labor expenses. There were no additional out-of-pocket expenses that the city had. A draft of the claim under the Road to Recovery COVID grant from the state was made. However, I have to admit that I failed to hit the submit button in a timely fashion, so we'll have to wait till September before we receive those funds. But there are no ongoing expenses of any significance that the city is incurring at this point. And it may be some weeks before the staff requests additional appropriation for this purpose.
So 212 out of 250.
I'm sorry?
We're at 212,000 out of 250.
Yes, but with the grant of getting back of 134,000, the city has really only spent about 79. Of that 250.
Right, thank you. Any questions for the Director of Finance? G19. Yes, sir. Alderman Mayor.
Just one point. We did earlier on disinfecting of City Hall and possibility of cleaning a little more thoroughly. That may be one more expense that could be looked at. And maybe one more expense the Finance Director could consider and
Yeah, currently we're using our staff for that, but yeah, we'll take a look. That's
even staff time can be charged and billed.
And to the Alderman's point, staff, when they are working on COVID-related issues, do in fact charge their time there, and we are making that claim when it is available under the Road to Recovery program.
Very good, thank you.
The June financial report on G19 on page 253. Mr. Rosenberg, any highlights?
The highlights are included in the memo, Mr. Mayor, that was submitted to the Finance Committee, as well as copies to all of the aldermen earlier. The Finance Committee reviewed this at its recent July meeting and recommends acceptance of the report.
Alderman Wilhelm.
I'd like to ask some questions regarding funding, because I want to make sure that we don't drop the ball again on the Marquette Avenue. So earlier I had talked to you about different funding that's available, and I don't know if the 116th Street will be awarded or how that's going to work out, but there is a fair amount of money in there that if it doesn't go through right away, it could go toward a portion of the Marquette thing. I don't want to take from that project, but if it doesn't move forward, that's an option. And you said there are currently 621,500 unused funds for different park projects and purchasing property. The Cascade Trail, which came up after Marquette Avenue, and the overflow parking, I'm not sure where we're at with that, but various other trails projects. So basically we would have a total of $768,000 available to match what we have there. That should bring us there to that project. One of the things I see is we're talking about using these park impact fees for covering the trail costs or the sidewalks at Marquette. So if we take funds from other park projects to make sure we can cover that, I don't know what you're going to come up with for all of that, but I want to make sure that there's a commitment from this council to dedicate and get this project done. There was no timeline on the motion. That was probably a failure on the last motion and also a failure on this motion, because that one went over 5 months before anything happened. So I guess I'm looking for commitment that we can diligently financially put this project together with the funds that between what you've laid out here and other available funds, and even if there's some borrowing involved or whatever we have to do, I'm looking for that commitment that we're all on the same page, that we're going to make this project happen. So I don't have a motion to go with that, but I just want everyone up here to say you made this motion before, made this motion now. Let's make sure that we don't end up dropping the ball on this. So as we move forward, can we continue with that? And Glenn, do you have an idea when you'll be able to bring information forward?
I am planning tomorrow or Thursday contact Mr. Lynch and see how quickly we can get a set of plans up to bid.
Thank you.
Okay, G20, page 293.
Mr. Mayor, do we have to receive and place on file?
Yeah, we made the motion, but I had a question, so we didn't vote.
On what?
The place up, receive the report.
Oh, you did? I'll second it then.
I need to place the G20 financial report on file.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 You got lots of support for that one.
Motion carries. I still don't know how Marquette Avenue got in the middle of a financial report, but okay. G20, this one's going to be fun. Development of a Franklin policy to eliminate private property inflow and infiltration. And I asked for the Common Council to pay particular attention to this. This is an important issue that needs some attention because there's lots of moving parts on this one.
So,
Mr. City Engineer.
Okay. Apologize for the lateness, but I was hoping that we could do this out of the committee of the whole meeting, so it's going to take a little bit of time, and I apologize for that.
Ms. Specht, are you on the phone?
Ms. Specht?
Sorry, I had to unmute myself. Yes, I am.
Okay, good. Thanks. Just chime in when you can.
Sure. Ms. Specht is an engineer with MMSD who helps with the PPII program. She's also a Franklin resident and member of our Board of Public Works. So I want to tell you a story. Happened once upon a time, specifically 20 years ago. A place far, far away, a place called Greencastle, Indiana. Population about 10,000 people. That includes a liberal arts college for about 3,000 kids, and a conservative surrounding, so it's what you would call Midwest. About the only thing in Greencastle at this time was the name, or actually these signs. So these signs say, warning, potential health hazard if overflowing. And situation was, it's because of a sanitary sewer system that they had at the time. I liken it to the couch behind Grandma's barn. It's very old. It's got a lot of cracks in it. It's got springs popping up everywhere. And so pretty much any time it would rain, basements around town would fill with water, sewage. If it was a significant rain, manholes were overflowing. These signs were literally in every neighborhood, sometimes several of them in the neighborhood. And severe rains, city staff would be out the next day, clean up the streets because of the little manhole lid and spew toilet paper and everything else around. So Greencastle was not green. They became under a agreed order with the state EPA version that they have IDEM. And as part of that project, they had a consultant come in, and they looked at the entire system and decided that it was too expensive to fix the sewers. So what they were going to do is they were going to allow Greencastle to build a sewage plant that would handle the peak flows and build a couple sewage, large diameter sewers to maybe help redirect some of the sewage around the downtown area. So that's when they hired me as their city engineer. At the time, I was, I call a sewer rat, a sewer geek as far as projects that I was working on. The state allowed Greencastle to do those other projects on the condition that they continue to work on their INI, inflow and infiltration. So we set to work, and we did pretty much every kind of project that there was to do INI. So we did pipelining, pipe bursting, point repairs. We replaced pipes. We replaced manholes. We lined manholes. We replaced manhole castings that were open. Pretty much if it was in the INI toolbox, we at least looked at it, if not made use of it. We worked very hard on that as we built the new plant and the other project. So at the end of the project, when we finished the plant, fortunately there was a drought. So for a couple months, our sewer superintendent Mike came in my office. I still remember this day. His eyes, he goes, "Wow, it hasn't rained for a while. We haven't had any overflows for a while. The sewage plant's built." So quickly, I wrote a letter to the state. We got off of the agreed order, and I'm glad we did it when we did, because then it started raining again and things started going again. I recall another conversation with Mike. He came in my office another day, and he goes, "Glenn," he goes, "all that work we did to fix the sewer system, I don't see a bit of difference." And I said, "Well, let me tell you a little secret in the INI business. It really doesn't help. We have cameras. We look, we find things, and we fix things. You may help the situation for that time, maybe a year, maybe 2 years, but what happens is that water will find someplace else to get into the system. It will back up, it will maybe get to a higher level, and will maybe go in the sewer laterals. When it does have the higher water table, it actually has more pressure, and you can actually have worse INI after some repairs." So I said, "I'm not surprised, but tell you what I'd like to do, Mike. Let's try something that I saw at a had some ideas at a conference I had gone to previously in Kansas City." So at this conference, it was all on INI. There was three different presentations where they actually tracked every drop of water in the system. And what they found was that 30 to 40% of the INI, or I should say 60 to 70% of the INI came from the private side. So private sources like your house or your lateral, something like that. So I realized that if you had what I call the Maxwell House system, good to the last drop public system, you've only fixed 30 to 40% of the problem. So I figured out that you were much, much more active if you could actually go after the private side. In addition, at this conference, I saw a lot of examples where other communities were under agreed order, much like Greencastle at the time. And you don't want to go there. So they basically had a warrant. They would go to your house, knock on your door. They had a police escort sometimes go in your house and evaluate it. And then when they find defects, they require that you fixed it. Well, fortunately, we got off of the agreed order. So I said, we have some breathing time to do this. I said, let's see what we can do. I've got this idea, and so we tried it. So I put in your packet a copy of the policy that we drafted. The whole idea is that in Greencastle, we would require that every home at the time of sale be inspected, or at least certified. So, and the trigger actually happened when you asked for a new utility count. So you would come into the city hall and you would ask for a new utility count, and we would make sure that your home had been certified INI compliant. We didn't know when that home ever got fixed. So typically what happened when you and I would buy and sell a home, that the guy who came in and did the roof inspection, the termite inspection, yada, 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 would do an INI inspection, and things would be fixed. We tried to write this policy plain enough that any person could actually figure out how to fix their home. DePauw University actually helped me do a video. I think it played several times a day for quite a while on the public access channel, then once a day, then once a week, but I think you can probably still catch it on the occasional Saturday. But it explains to the residents. So there's really two reasons why people violate your policy. One is they know it and they do it anyway, kind of like speeders we were talking about today. But in reality, people don't realize that they're by them not fixing their downspout, they're causing sewage to back up in their neighbor's house. So a lot of people just fix stuff on their own. They realize what was wrong, and they would go out and fix it. Other plumbers would be in a house fixing things, like maybe a leaky toilet, whatever, and they would say, oh, by the way, while I'm here, when you go to sell your house, this won't pass inspection. If you pay me to fix that now, I'll give you an inspection for free, those kinds of things. So people fix stuff without the city ever knowing about it. The only people we charged were to be a certified inspector. To be a certified inspector, I think you paid $100. You came in and listened to me preach at you for about an hour. I explained what we're looking for, how to inspect it, and then that's the only person we charged. Afterwards, when we tried to track the effectiveness of it, people who bought the homes had no idea what issues were done to their houses. The idea was that when things were found, we didn't require that they get fixed. So we would give you a waiver. So, for example, you may have a very inexpensive house with a very expensive fix, like maybe it had replaced a lateral under a road or something like that. We would allow you to not fix it, but then you might have an increased sewer account until you did show us a certified compliance statement. So our thought was the average house in Greencastle sold every 7 years. We figured in 7 years we would have, you know, 80-90% of the homes looked at. And if we could get rid of that without any cost to the city, that would be a big boom. So remember I told you that in the beginning of this policy, even after we did all the fixes to our public system, every time it would rain, things would overflow all over town. And when some lift stations, they would start flowing right away, and they would last for several days, leaking sewage into the nearby river. About 3 years into the policy, when people had a chance to get this fixed, we were able to get rid of every single one of these signs except for one location, actually when I left the city, and that was for the main lift station in town. And now when it overflowed, instead of used to it would overflow for days, it had to be a really, really big rain. It would take a while for it to overflow, but when it did overflow, it was just for a few hours. So I believe they actually fixed that once I left. So just this policy alone that didn't cost the city really anything to implement, just some staff time, it had tremendous impact. We did some research. I had a consultant we worked with who helped us try to study it. And this consultant, by the way, had a Milwaukee office, and Dr. Willie Ganwa, if you know Dr. Willie Ganwa, from MSOE now, he works full-time with MSOE, professor. He actually came down and he helped do all the math to figure out what effect it had. We went on a tour, if you will, the Glenn and Willie tour. We would preach at different conferences across the United States on sewage issues. I had people as far away as Alaska call and get advice on how this worked. Everybody implemented it a little bit differently. When I went to be a consultant again, I actually helped some other communities in Indiana and Ohio implement some similar policies tailored to their community, how they wanted to do things. I mentioned that Dr. Willie Gunn was from Milwaukee. He actually came back to MMSD. As I understand the story, he tried to sell MMSD on the concept, and the realtors got a hold of the idea, and they went to Madison, and they passed a law that you cannot have something hinged on the sale of a house. So I would have to do it differently if I were to do something here. I would like to take the Greencastle policy and do something with the same flavor, make it as easy for the residents as possible, and with as little effort on them as possible. And if we find something, it's not a big deal. We'll give them so much time to fix it. If they don't fix it, then maybe we charge, you know, $10 a month or something like that additional on their sewer bill. I believe we do have some pulse or some permission to do that.